Okay, we're going to get started. I have Dr. Alan Sawson with us tonight. I'm very excited to have you with us, Dr. Sawson.
Thank you, Dr. Connor.
He's the founder and the medical director of the Institute of Progressive Medicine, and he's received his degree in Northwestern University of Medical School, and he's board certified both in internal medicine and nephrology. So it's exciting to have you on because it's always a pleasure to be able to send people to someone who can bridge the gap between Eastern and Western, I guess, medicine, so to speak, or have an alternative approach for people. So why don't you kind of tell us what kind of practice that you have?
Well, as you said, I'm an internist, and I've been traditionally trained. I went to Northwestern University and graduated an awfully long time ago. And in the course of 40 years in practice, I gradually learned that the conventional way of treating people was not the best way. And we would see lots of problems from surgical procedures, from medications. People would get side effects. They wouldn't get better. Sometimes they got worse. And we weren't going after the kinds of things that we should have been going after, which has a lot to do with lifestyle, with how people eat, with the kind of exercise they do, if they get exercise, what kinds of stresses they're under. All the kinds of things that relate to how we live our daily lives are very closely connected with how we get sick and what kinds of sicknesses we get. So those are the things we concentrate in our practice these days. It doesn't mean that we don't use medications, because a lot of times we do, and sometimes people are so sick that they really require them, at least for a period of time. But our emphasis in general is to try and go after the lifestyle factors and correct them that cause disease and make disease worse. And that's pretty much how we differ. We work a lot with nutritional supplements as well, so vitamins and minerals and amino acids, proteins, those kinds of things can be very beneficial, and we know quite a bit about them and use them a lot.
Yeah, and that's, you know, you're talking about lifestyle factors. I mean, don't you think most chronic diseases come from lifestyle problems?
I mean, that's yes, I do. I mean, there's a genetic component to a lot of things, and if people's parents tend to have certain diseases, then they're oftentimes more likely to get them as well. But all these things are modifiable. Even the genetics are often modifiable with lifestyle changes. So if a person goes after the factors that contribute to disease, they can prevent it. They can avoid getting it. And sometimes even after they've gotten it, they can reverse it. They can get rid of it.
Yeah.
A lot of diseases that we see are reversible diseases, like osteoporosis, like heart disease, like hypertension. A lot of things can be gotten rid of even after they've started.
That's really exciting. That's exciting for a lot of people, because I think in Western medicine we're so, you know, indoctrinated with this idea that once we have something, we're going down a road and you're not coming back from it. And, you know, to think that you can reverse things and you know, that there are doctors out there that have that kind of mentality, because, you know, you're not a typical medical doctor, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I don't think I'm typical. I don't think the other doctors in our practice are typical either. We have a naturopath who's very much involved in lifestyle, and we have another MD who's also very much involved in lifestyle. I mean, the cards are kind of stacked against someone who has a condition. You know, the insurance companies, once you have something, they think you're going to have it forever, and the insurance companies have refused coverage for people once they got high blood pressure, once they had diabetes, even though both of those conditions are reversible. We have lots of patients whose high blood pressure has gone away and lots of patients whose diabetes has gone away with the lifestyle changes and the nutritional supplements and the exercise and the things that you do to make those things go away. They really can go away, but, you know, the officials out there, the insurance companies and, you know, doctors look at hospital records, so if you had diabetes diagnosed 20 years ago, they think you still have it. But that's not at all necessarily the case.
Well, that's great to hear. Now, isn't heart disease the number one killer in North America?
It is. It still is. There's been a lot of change. I mean, there's a reduced incidence of death at earlier ages. So all the things that have been done with the studies, with the medications, with the stents and the bypasses really have had the effect of reducing the rate of death at certain ages, but now people, instead of dying at the age of 50, are dying at the age of 80 and 90 from heart disease.
Right.
So we've helped somewhat, but not entirely. And a lot of that is, again, because we haven't gone after the basic factors that we need to. Drugs themselves only take you so far. And cardiac procedures, like all of these hundreds of thousands of stents that get put in, have not been shown to prolong life. They don't make you live any longer. They simply reduce symptoms, which is a good thing. But if you want to live longer, you have to go after the risk factors, which means lifestyle.
Right. Again, lifestyle is what it comes down to. I know I tell my patients every day, it's not the one big thing you do. It's the little things that you do every day that add up to the big thing, you know, that causes the heart attack or whatever the chronic disease is, you know, that creates these problems in our body. If we're just doing the right things every day, the right things, then obviously you can prevent a lot of problems in the future.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the studies have shown for many years that by the time a person becomes symptomatic, you know, has the heart attack or starts getting the chest pain, the problem has really been going on for 10, 20, 30, or 40 years. I mean, the things that show themselves, even in testing, will be apparent many years before the event occurs.
Right.
So, you know, that final last straw that drives the person down, you know, the car accident or eating the hot dog at the baseball game or getting yelled at by the boss, it looks like the precipitating factor. But really, it's been going on for a very long time.
Yeah. And that's, I think with any alternative doctor, that we really try to educate people that those symptoms are always the tip of the iceberg. You know, it always is. You know that the stuff's been going on for a really long time, and then, bam, they think they just had a problem, you know, that just occurred. And it's never that way. The little warning signs are there all along, or sometimes not, you know. And then people are motivated to make those changes. But really, if they can start doing that before the heart attack happens or the big disease is diagnosed, that they're going to be in a much better position.
So how did you
become this kind of doctor? I mean, I know you said you found it wasn't, you know, it only took you so far, but like what was kind of the precipitating events that kind of occurred that was you were like, okay, I need to make some big changes in how I practice?
Well, my first exposure was probably about 30-some years ago when we moved to Philadelphia, and I had been a nephrologist, which was a kidney expert back in New York, and decided to change my focus and got more into general medicine and other things. And one of my positions was working at a place called the Institute for the Achievement of Human Potential, which was in Philadelphia, still is there. And they worked with taking care of kids mostly with brain injuries of different kinds or brain problems. So it could be Down syndrome, could be cerebral palsy, could be near drowning, all of those kinds of problems they dealt with. And their method of dealing with it was with nutritional changes, with vitamin supplements. They would tend to take these kids off drugs because most of them were on different kinds of drugs to prevent seizures, etc. And they had very strong stimulating programs. So they would stimulate them intellectually, physically, physiologically. They got them moving. They got them breathing. They got them doing things. And it was extremely vigorous type of a program. And the kids got better, many of whom had not gotten better after years of being treated conventionally, which basically is with drugs. So they hadn't had their diets changed. They hadn't been put on nutritional supplements. They hadn't been put into a strong program of exercise and intellectual development. And that's what worked. And when I saw that, I said, gee, you know, this isn't just kids. This isn't just brain-injured kids. It's all kids, and it's all adults as well. So we all need to go after those things that change the way our bodies function so that we don't fall into the trap of getting stuck with drugs and operations.
Well, that's great. And then you just kind of went from there, right? I mean, because from there, you had another practice out here, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I opened a private practice in Philadelphia as well and had that for a dozen years or so, and then we moved to California, and I did not want to go back to doing conventional medicine. I mean, once you get into doing things this way, you can't go back because you know this is what works the best. That's what you have to do. So all the work I've done out in California has been along the same route. It's been with alternative or holistic or complementary medicine, with lifestyle changes, trying to avoid drugs or get people off drugs, trying to avoid surgery, that kind of thing. It's been all these other approaches. That's our focus.
Yeah, and that's great. And certainly you do surgery when necessary.
If someone, comes in with appendicitis, they need an operation. If a person has a cancer that can be removed, I think it should be removed.
And that's nice that people have that, because you're not way out there saying, no, we're not going to use traditional medicine. When it's necessary, you definitely implement that. So what kind of problems do you deal with mainly in your clinic? What do you see?
Well, we see just about everything. I mean, we see kids from the age of 2 years old on. We see adults. My oldest patient right now is 99 years old. And we deal with all of the problems that come up. So it's heart disease, it's diabetes, it's high blood pressure, it's kidney disease, osteoporosis. We do a lot of work with hormone replacement. We do see people who have acute problems, like someone with a urinary infection or a respiratory infection. We see all of those things. We don't do surgery, so those folks get referred. If someone needs, say, a hip replacement or something, we refer them to, someone who can do that for them. But all the other things, we do see.
Okay. And then we're going to get into osteoporosis and some hormone questions in a minute, but what kind of special treatments do you have in your clinic?
Well, we do a lot of intravenous therapies. We use intravenous vitamin C, intravenous other nutrients, amino acids that can be beneficial for people for lots of different things. Someone who has an acute infection, for instance, oftentimes will recover faster by doing these intravenous therapies. Someone who's going to have an operation or has had an operation, someone who's getting chemotherapy or radiation therapy for cancer, those folks all benefit from these infusions. And we have like 50 different kinds that we work with, and I've seen a lot of results. I've had a number of them myself for different things my body has gone through. So they can be really helpful. We do chelation therapy, which is a way of treating heart disease and peripheral vascular disease and getting heavy metals out of the body. We do that. We do some other treatments that are not as well known, things like external counterpulsation, which is a non-invasive way of treating vascular disease. So people who have heart disease, who have chest pain, who have carotid artery disease, who've had strokes, you can treat those folks by using a device that increases circulation without putting any needles or doing any other procedure. It's an external way of applying pressure to return blood to the heart and helping the heart put out more blood. So it increases blood flow throughout the body. I've seen enormous advantages from that for chest pain, for angina, for people with congestive heart failure, and even sometimes for people with memory problems or dementia. I've seen it be effective for that with in combination with some of the intravenous therapies we do.
That's great. And that's what a nice alternative, because what is the typical treatment that they would do for things like that medically?
Typical treatment involves doing a cardiac catheterization, looking for a blockage and putting a stent in it to open it up. Or if the person's too sick, they'll oftentimes do bypass surgery. If they can't put a stent in, they'll say, well, you need to have an operation where we're going to bypass your blockages. So those are, very big procedures. It takes a long time to get over them, and it's very stressful for the patient and for the family. And doing this external counterpulsation that we use can bypass it altogether. So I've had patients who had congestive heart failure who had already been through these procedures with stents, sometimes with bypass surgery, still having symptoms, still on lots of medications, and we do this external counterpulsation procedure, and their symptoms go away, and they can get off of medication sometimes. So it can be beneficial either before or after these other procedures. We really do too many of those procedures in this country. There should be a lot less. People should be addressed using lifestyle changes. We know from the literature, which is very strong, indicating that if you handle weight, handle blood pressure, handle blood sugar, handle all of these factors that produce heart disease, that you can reverse it.
That's fantastic to hear. I'm sure a lot of people listening are probably very excited about that, because again, we're trained to think differently with all of that. And, you know, the consequences of heart disease are dire. You know, it's not, once you've been diagnosed with that, it's, you know, most people think there's no coming back from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because when I went to med school a million years ago, that's what we were taught. Once you had heart disease, that was it. And it was only going to get worse. There was no way of making it better. And even at that time, there was, the information was there. Nathan Pritikin had his clinic way back when I was in med school, and he was already reversing heart disease.
Yeah.
But they didn't talk to us about that. They didn't teach us that. We were taught the opposite, which is not correct.
Yeah. Well, I tell my patients all the time, unless you're 6 feet under, I think there's something we can do. I think, you know, most people are just been, their hope's been taken away. And it's so sad, because I just don't buy into that. I think there's always something you can do. And not necessarily, it doesn't have to be invasive. It can be, you know, something that's very simple. And usually, you know, truth is simple. So the simpler things tend to be more effective.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, you're so right about that hope part of it. One of the main things that anybody in a health profession should do is help the patient to maintain hope. A doctor that someone sees or whoever that says there is no hope or you're going to be dead in 3 months, that's the wrong professional to see. That's not the right doctor. I would go on to somebody else if you hear that from someone, because it's the wrong message. It's often untrue. And that doctor's attitude is not a good attitude.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of our job as practitioners, is to be our patients' cheerleaders. And, you know, we're there to support them and help them and be better, not to, I mean, who knows how long someone has to live, or, you know, if you are diagnosed with some kind of disease, nobody fits into a category necessarily as far as this time frame or this or that. I mean, that's just not fair to do to people. So,
yeah.
You know, one of the things that I really admire about you was one time I came and talked to you. You actually spent a lot of time speaking with me. And I know you do that with your patients. Like, you actually listen to the people that come in, and you pay attention to what they have to say. You actually do an extensive history with people, and you find out what's going on with them. You look at them as a whole human being, as opposed to just, like, if you specialize in nephrology, you're not caring just about their kidneys, correct?
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it's a whole picture. We spend half an hour per visit with the average visit. The first visit we have an hour for, so there's usually plenty of time to really talk to the person and see what's going on. What you can do in 5 minutes with a patient, I'm not even sure what that would be, because you can't get the story. You can't really handle a problem in 5 minutes.
Right, and getting a whole history and everything, which is so critical to find out, you know, what happened, you know, what's been going on your whole life. Because, you know, like I know in my practice, a lot of times, the misalignment of the spine will start from when they were at birth or shortly thereafter. And if we don't go through a history of their whole life, we're not going to find out, like, what's the cause of it, what's actually starting all this, or, you know, and it's like putting a puzzle together where you can start linking things together. And people need that. They need to be able to connect the dots. And then, because if they're going to make changes in their life, they have to know that, okay, well, maybe when I started doing this when I was a kid, and then this eating behavior or whatever it is, and now I'm here. But in order for them to kind of put it all together and then make those proper lifestyle changes, they have to be able to make those connections. And obviously you do that with people, because you do spend the time figuring it out with them. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's an important part of the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about osteoporosis. So what is osteoporosis?
Osteoporosis just means porous bones. It means the bones are thin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a painless condition to start with. So people who have osteoporosis usually don't know, just like with a lot of these other conditions, they don't know that's what's going on. You don't know that until you do a bone density study, which is a low-dose x-ray that tells you how thick your bones are. Usually you measure it in the hip and in the lower back because those are the areas that run into trouble. The pain that can occur happens when the bones break. Otherwise, you don't get pain. So by then, something has been going on for a long time. Person falls down, and instead of having a bruise on the hip is broken. And then you do a bone density study and see, wow, this was really pretty bad osteoporosis. We should have been after this 5 or 10 years ago. Osteoarthritis is a different condition, and people sometimes get confused because they think if they have pain, they have osteoporosis, but it usually doesn't mean that. The pain is usually coming from a different condition. It's either arthritis, which is inflammation in the joints, or they have ligament or tendon or muscle problems that create pain. And the pain is really not coming from osteoporosis, but that's oftentimes mixed in the picture. I mean, the pain situations are items that you deal with quite a bit when you work with patients, and that's not usually a consequence of osteoporosis. It's a consequence of other things.
Right. Yeah, I see a lot of people with osteoarthritis. And, you know, my opinion on osteoarthritis is that it's a mechanical defense mechanism of the body where you get that lipping and spurring of the bones because you've had misalignment in the body for a long period of time, and it's a protective mechanism of the body. It starts to lay down bone and attempts to grow together. The bones attempt to fuse and become more stable. So, but with that, you get compression and you get the nerve pain and everything. I see a lot of osteoporosis on films because, if I have a small woman, I'll shoot a film at a very light, when I do an x-ray, at a light dose, and then we'll see that, you know, the bones look almost black because they have no bone density there. So it's a serious problem in our culture, is it not?
Yeah, it's a very big problem. There's thousands and thousands of fractures occurring every year as a result. So in the lower back, which is a very common place, a person could just be walking across the room carrying 3 bananas and have a sudden pain in the back, which means that a lumbar vertebra has just fractured, and those pains can be pretty severe. They usually will heal after a period of time, but once you have enough osteoporosis to break a bone, there's other bones that can break as well. So it's really important to go after the factors that are connected with osteoporosis. And you can tell a lot of times just by looking at somebody. First of all, I think, you know, any woman around the age of 50 or even earlier than that, if there's a family history of osteoporosis, because it really does go in families, ought to have a bone density done to see where they are. This could be long before they ever get any symptoms, but a lady who is 40 years old who has a family history of osteoporosis involving a mother or a sister or an aunt, especially if they're thin, if their weight is low, if they're tall and thin, and if they're very light complexioned, those are the people who tend to get osteoporosis more, and they ought to be checked out. I've had ladies come in who've had bone densities or asked for bone density studies because of the family history, even though they were young and they were still premenopausal, but they had evidence that their bones were really thin, so we got started on things right away, and that saved them an awful lot of trouble down the road.
Okay, and do men get osteoporosis as well?
They sure do. You know, that's a misapprehension. A lot of people think if it only happens in ladies, but men get about half as much osteoporosis as women do. So if 3 people who have it, 2 of them are going to be women, but 1 of them is going to be a man.
Right.
And I've seen it even in men who were tall and heavy and looked very muscular. You'd think this person is never going to have osteoporosis, but I had a fellow not long ago who fractured or had a hip surgery done as a hip replacement. It didn't heal, and he came to me after nothing was happening for about a year. He's still walking with a cane and having a lot of pain in his hip, and his bone density was horrible. It was like an 80-year-old woman, so he turned out to have testosterone deficiency, and putting him on testosterone improved his bone density to the point where his pain went away within about 3 months, and we see that kind of thing frequently. So there's a lot of men walking around who haven't been exercising, whose diet hasn't been good, and there's a lot of dietary factors in that, and they have osteoporosis.
Yeah. Okay, and what causes osteoporosis? I know you just mentioned hormones, so why don't you get into that?
Yeah, hormones are probably primary, certainly in women. Around the time of menopause, women lose more calcium from their bones than they do for those 5 years around menopause. They lose more calcium than do the whole rest of their lives.
Wow.
So that's a time when the bones really lose a lot of calcium, and that's a crucial time to be putting them on hormone replacement therapy, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit. But there's other factors involved as well. High protein diets, so people who eat a lot of meat, a lot of chicken, a lot of eggs, really high animal proteins, they're at higher risk. Smoking cigarettes really thins the bones. A lot of alcohol thins the bones. Lack of exercise, which is a common problem these days where people are, working too long, sitting at computers, not doing their exercise, that predisposes to osteoporosis quite a bit as well.
And I want to just go back onto the high protein. So all these people that, like, the Paleolithic diet, is that actually harming them or setting themselves up for a osteoporotic condition?
Well, that's a good question. I know the Paleolithic diet is pushed a lot because there's a lot of good things about it. It does take away sugar, which itself causes osteoporosis, and it takes away, a lot of things that we shouldn't be eating, these prepared foods and the high-salt diets. And high salt also causes osteoporosis by having the calcium go out in the urine with all the sodium that we eat and have to dispose of. So I'm not sure about a good Paleolithic diet may be okay, but the best evidence for not getting osteoporosis is in vegetarians. Vegetarians do not tend to get osteoporosis. Their bones are thicker than other people. So that's really the right diet for prevention, is one that's mostly fruits and vegetables and not so much in the way of animal products.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, well, do you find medications useful for osteoporosis?
Well, they're good as far as they go. The bisphosphonates are the drugs that are used the most, and they're used to great excess, in my opinion. I've seen women placed on these drugs with normal bone density, with minimally depressed bone density, and they could get put on Boniva and Fosamax and all these other drugs, which actually have kind of a limited effect. So the hormones themselves are far more effective in raising bone density than the bisphosphonate drugs. The other thing is that they only are good for improvements over about 3 to 5 years. After that time, you don't get any more improvement. And they have lots of side effects. Most people at this point know that the bisphosphonate drugs, the Boniva and the Fosamax, alendronate, those things can cause deficient bone formation. So some people will get something called aseptic necrosis of the jaw. So the bone in the jaw actually deteriorates and dies. And dentists all know about this. They will not do big procedures on anybody who's been taking a bisphosphonate drug. They tell them to get off of it for the next 3 months, and then maybe they'll operate on them because they know it may not heal. They'll extract the tooth, and the hole won't fill up. It won't heal. I saw a photo in a magazine just the other day of an elderly woman who was on one of these drugs for a couple of years, and she developed aseptic necrosis of her mandible. So her jawbone deteriorated, got a great big hole, then it got infected, and it looked horrendous.
Wow.
So they had to treat her with, stop the drug, put her on antibiotics and a few other things, and she finally healed up. But it's a pretty nasty thing to have happen to you. And other people have developed fractures of the hip, of the thigh bone, because the bone that's created in some people by these drugs is not good bone. It's weak bone, and it tends to fracture. So you can get a pathologic fracture of the thigh bone, which requires surgery in some people who get this. These are not common effects, but they're common enough, and then it makes you wonder, well, what's, if I take that, what's it going to do to my bone? You just don't know.
Right. Not to mention other side effects in the body. I mean, just the fact that it's probably pretty hard on the liver.
Well, it can be. The main other place that it causes trouble is in the gastrointestinal tract, especially the esophagus. So I've had a number of patients who were given these drugs, which are usually pills to swallow, who'll develop abdominal pain and pain in the esophagus where it hurts them to swallow, or they get a lot of stomach pain, and it's coming from the drug. So anybody who has reflux symptoms or stomach problems, we tell them not to use these drugs because it always makes them worse.
Okay. Okay. Well, some alternatives to medication. What would be effective lifestyle changes that people could implement to help?
Well, for one, I'd be working on changing the diet. Away from more protein, away from salt, away from sugar, away from alcohol. Certainly, no cigarettes. We have people exercising. I prefer 30 to 60 minutes of some form of aerobic activity 7 days a week. So the more walking you do, the better your bones will get. And some people will walk carrying 2 or 3 or 5 pound weights in their hands. That, makes it more effective. Things like a trampoline. A lot of people have little trampolines or rebounders, they call them, at home. And you can stand on those things and bounce up and down for 10 minutes a day, and that's really effective at building bone density. Supplements can be really helpful. So calcium has some benefit. You don't really need a lot of it, but I think 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day is useful. Magnesium as a nutritional supplement is very helpful, so that should be 300 or 400 milligrams a day. We use another item called strontium, which is a mineral that gets laid down in bone just like calcium does, and there have been some articles on strontium showing that it will increase bone density and reduce the risk of fracture, and it's very, very safe. Vitamin D should be optimized. There's an awful lot of press these days about vitamin D because they found out 5 or 6 years ago that everybody was low, which you would logically expect, but they never tested for it. So now we know that everybody should be taking vitamin D. We usually use in our practice about 5,000 units a day, which I found to be very safe, and nobody has gone too high with it, and it usually gives you a good enough level. So vitamin D is also good. Vitamin K is useful. And other things are, getting away from drugs that can worsen or create osteoporosis, the main one of which is steroids. And steroids are used for all kinds of things, lung diseases, autoimmune diseases. Steroids are used for arthritis, even though they actually break down joints instead of building them up. They do reduce pain to a degree. But steroids create terrific osteoporosis. There are other medications like Lupron, which is used for men with prostate cancer and women with certain kinds of hormone conditions where you want to turn off the estrogen for a while. Lupron, by blocking hormone production, really creates osteoporosis big time.
Wow. So pretty much most people are walking around probably in a state where they could have osteoporosis, because if you just look at the typical American diet, they're creating that just with their diet.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of things people can do to just prevent it just by changing.
Yeah, and if there's any question, if I see someone who's bent over, they have that very crooked posture where the head is forward and the chest is in a question mark shape instead of being straight.
Yeah.
These folks are very highly likely to have osteoporosis. So we just get bone density studies and we get started on things on those folks. But it's really important to get it before it progresses to the point of being very hard to treat. So people should concentrate on this in their 40s, 50s, 60s at the latest. And I know that Medicare only pays for a certain age, like you have to be, really old to get a study done, and regular insurances don't want to pay for it a lot of the time.
Right.
But people should just handle it and, find out where they are. And if they're in a good spot, then fine. Just, live the right lifestyle so you don't develop it. But if you're in not a good spot, that's the time to go after fixing it. And it is reversible. I've seen bone densities go up enormously in people in their 60s, 70s, and even in their 80s. You can increase bone density at any age.
Right. That's fantastic. So how can hormones help? What type, you talked about hormones, so.
Well, we work a lot with hormones. We only use bioidentical hormones, which means it's the same structure that the human being makes. So we don't use things that come from horse urine. We don't use Premarin. We don't use Provera. We only use what's bioidentical. And there's research that's been done that bioidentical estrogen, for instance, does not increase the risk of breast cancer. If you use it in the right way, if you use the right dosages, if you use it along with progesterone,
right.
which we always do, it does not increase the risk of breast cancer. The risk remains the same as if women were not taking any hormones. So that can be done very safely, and I know that's the main concern of most women is, you know, can I get breast cancer from this? And we can't reduce the risk to zero, but it doesn't increase the risk. And I think that's the main thing. And the hormones are so effective at for bone density. It's just, like, amazing. We routinely see bone densities go up, and I've seen them go up 2 and 3 and 4% per year for several years. The most effective hormones that we use are the pellets, and these are little rice grain size containers of hormones, which usually is estrogen as well as testosterone, so it's two pellets. And we put them under the skin of the buttock, not where the person is going to be sitting, but above that level. And you just make a little cut in the skin, and you slide the pellets in, and they stay there and will secrete hormones for 3 to 4 months on a continuous basis. So the level of estrogen remains the same, the level of testosterone remains the same, and the woman feels great. Libido goes up, energy goes up, mood goes up, their skin looks better. Everything basically gets better, besides getting rid of hot flashes, night sweats, depression, insomnia. All those things change in a favorable way, and the bone density goes up. So that's a very powerful treatment, and it's one I really recommend to women who have ongoing osteoporosis because it's the strongest treatment we have. And we use it along with the calcium and the magnesium and the vitamin D and the strontium, the exercise, the dietary changes. You put all those things together, and the bone density is going to go up.
That's great. Well, good. There's hope, you know. Because I think a lot of women, once they... And I'm sure men, I don't think men think about it as much just because it's not talked about as much. But, you know, once menopause hits, for a lot of women, just a lot of things start to go wrong. So, you know, and it's because their hormones are so out of whack and they just need to have that balance in there.
So yeah, I think,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The stuff that came out about 10 years ago about hormones really did a disservice to women. And, you know, doctors were afraid, and they took women off of hormones, and when they had menopausal symptoms, they gave them antidepressant drugs, which, by the way, also increase osteoporosis. And they didn't deal with them. They didn't, you know, help them in the way they should have helped them. Now there's more information coming out that this business with breast cancer coming from hormones was exaggerated, and they were using the wrong kinds of hormones. They were using, you know, horse urine hormones. They were using artificial hormones. They weren't using the hormones that we use, and the literature on the hormones we use is favorable.
Right.
And there's more and more women coming in asking for these hormones. We give lectures on them. We have, you know, many, many women, and a lot of guys as well who are taking hormones in the form of testosterone, which can also be done quite safely, all the time. You know, it's a very powerful treatment, and people feel so much better. They wonder why they didn't do it before.
Yeah.
And, you know, they send their friends in and their relatives in, and they say, I want to look and feel like Susan does or, you know, whoever it is, so they can get the same results, which they usually do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what are the drugs that worsen osteoposis?
We mentioned steroids, you know, yeah. Prednisone and cortisone, drugs used for, you know, asthma and rheumatoid arthritis, those kinds of drugs. Drugs that block the production of acid in the stomach. A lot of people are taking these proton pump inhibitors like Nexium. And anything that blocks acid production has an interference with calcium absorption and the maintenance of bones. So those are drugs that will worsen osteoporosis. Those are probably the main ones. The hormone blockers like Lupron that I mentioned will create osteoporosis in a big way. Some of the anti-cancer drugs, things that slow down metabolism in the body, will aggravate osteoporosis. Those are probably the main ones.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's a lot because, you know, typically I see when people come in, they're typically on a few drugs. I mean, most people are walking around and they've been medicated for whatever condition it is. So a lot of people don't realize, you know, you're taking this drug for, say, cholesterol because you've been put on that, that it's creating all kinds of other problems in their body that they don't even realize, you know, and may not realize for 5 years.
Right.
But the side
well,
effect,
sometimes the doctors, you know, they don't fill the patients in the way they should, and they'll say, oh, this drug doesn't have any side effects, which is, you know, an outright lie because every drug has side effects. Or it's very minimal, or there isn't going to be any problem with it. Or they'll say, well, you have to take this drug because if you don't, you're going to die.
Right.
And I've heard that story from patients as well. I've had several, actually numerous patients who develop muscle pain, usually in the legs from taking a statin drug. And that's a common side effect. And I've had patients who could hardly walk. They had so much pain and weakness that reversed when we took the statin drug away. But the doctor said, oh, you got to take this. You have heart disease. You know, we got to get the cholesterol down without telling them there's other ways of doing it.
Right.
You can lower cholesterol a lot with changing how you eat, with taking niacin. We have another item that we just started working with called bergamot, which is a plant from Italy that they can make a pill out of, and bergamot lowers cholesterol 30%, and it has virtually no side effects. So there's a lot of alternative things that can be done, and some conventional docs, you know, they just don't look on the other side of the road to see what else can we do. They're so used to taking drugs and using drugs, they think that's the only way to skin the cat, but it isn't.
Yeah. Well, and our media kind of beats that into us, too, with the television. I mean, I stopped watching television 10 years ago, and I'm just shocked if I go to someone's home and in the drug commercials. It's just you're constantly being bombarded that you got this problem, you do this, it's a you know, you take this for a solution. And I think we've just become, you know, just inundated and it becomes almost unconscious at a certain point where you just think you need to take the stuff.
Yeah, it's really too bad. You know, that you have this friendly voice in the commercial that says, well, you know, if you take this drug, your nose may turn blue or your leg may fall off. but that's really okay because the face on the screen is smiling and happy.
Right.
You know, they don't show you the leg falling off or the nose turning blue.
Right. But you see it walking through the door.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you see it.
And it's horrifying. Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. If anyone wants to get a hold of you, they can get you at iProgressiveMed.com. But what's your phone number at your office?
949-600-5100.
Okay, great. I'm going to open up the line to questions right now. Did you have anything you wanted to add or to?
No, I think you did a pretty good job. Thanks, Dr. Connor.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to open up the line, and if you have any questions for Dr. Sawson, feel free to ask them. One second here. Okay. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Sawson?
Yeah, I have a question.
Is that Bill?
Yeah.
Okay.
If,
go ahead, Bill.
Non-drug supplements are a benefit, and if a person is not going to a Dr. Connor or Dr. Sawson, how do they sort through a massive presentation in stores like Vitamin Shoppe and GNC?
Well, that's really a good question. It's pretty difficult, really, for a layman to try and figure things out. I mean, we know that certain vitamins are useful for certain things. So say you know that strontium is good for bones. Where are you supposed to get it? What dose are you supposed to take? That can be kind of hard to find out, and you really don't know from a particular place that you get it, you know, is this a good product? Is the amount that's in it the amount that is on the label? Because sometimes it isn't. And, you know, how long has it been sitting around? If you're buying fish oil, you know, was it made 2 weeks ago or was it made 2 years ago? And has it been sitting in a warehouse for the last 2 years? You don't want that kind of product. So, you know, I think if a person is familiar with supplements and has a lot of experience with it, they may be able to go out and get the right thing. But otherwise, I think it's better to meet with somebody who knows, you know, who knows supplements and, you know, spend a little time with them and get their information. You know, we carry things in our office that we recommend to patients because we've researched all of it. We know the brands. We know what's in them. We get quality control reports Some of the labs will send their products off to independent, some of the vitamin companies send their products off to independent labs who will give them an honest report of purity. You know, are there heavy metals? Are there other things in there that shouldn't be in there? They get these reports. We get these reports so we can judge, you know, is this a good product or not? But for the average person out there, you know, those kinds of things are hard to do.
Yeah, and may I add something to that? I think that a lot of people are overdoing it with supplementation because, you know, they'll hear something on the news and then they go out and they get that product, but it doesn't mean they need that product. And a few years ago, I was involved with some research, the DNA, the telomere, how the telomeres change with different things that will affect the telomeres, basically. And what we found was that people can, I mean, you can create cancer by taking too much of, you know, these handfuls of vitamins that people are doing, that that's not the best way. And some of the most unhealthy people you will see are in the health food store because they're essentially self-medicating. So I really believe you need someone to help you sort through all of that. And really you need to get to the cause of what's creating problems in the body and not just go after the symptoms. Because a lot of people are just chasing symptoms with supplements as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay. Did we answer your question there, Bill?
Yeah, I guess the follow-on would be if somebody is not fortunate enough and introduced to either Dr. Sossin or Dr. Connor or comparable people focused on this aspect of well-being, how do they even know where to go to get the kind of information? Because if you talk to your normal standard doctor, you'll probably get nothing but a it's all bullshit response.
Well,
that's,
you know,
good.
That's true, because how many hours did you actually get of nutritional, any kind of nutritional awareness in school? 12 hours did you get?
Yeah, we didn't have 2 minutes when I went to school. We had nothing.
Yeah. So that's something, you know, people don't understand is that typically an MD isn't trained in that area. It just, and it's not that they, you know, not, they're not smart. It's just an area they haven't been trained in. So, you know, I think that it's kind of a grassroots movement is what we're looking at, is that you know, like I tell my patients, you got to tell people about what we do in this office because nobody knows. There's so few people doing this. And there's so few people like Dr. Sossin out there, and you got to tell people about him because, you know, his intention is the right intention for his patients. And so it's you know, people telling people and educating each other and saying, you know what, you know, that we're being lied to, you know, and we need to find truth and we need to keep seeking. And you just, I mean, that's how I find all my doctors is word of mouth, basically. You know, someone has a good experience or someone, you know, you hear them talking about something and go, I need to go meet that person. I need to, you know, maybe they can help me. So I think that's always the best way.
Yeah, word of mouth works pretty well. That's most of the stuff I learn these days is coming from my patients. You know, what procedure has worked, what doctor has helped me. That's where I get my information, is from the patients I see.
Yeah, me too. Okay, anybody else?
I have a question about hormones. This is Maureen.
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a former patient of Dr. Sossin's. He saved my life about 12 years ago because I had severe chronic fatigue syndrome, and I had been to many, many doctors for like 10 years. So following his program of different things like grapeseed extract and CoQ10 and DHEA, things like that, I'm totally free from chronic fatigue, and it took about 3 months of the supplements, so I praise his work. I know what he's talking about. Everything he said is absolutely right. Now I'm stuck with this hormonal problem, and the question I have to ask is, how do I wean myself off of the HRT, because I've been on it for 13 years? And I know I have to come and see Dr. Sawson, but I thought since I heard about this through my email, I thought I'd get involved with the conversation.
Yeah.
I'm on
Go ahead.
I'm on Prometrium 100 milligrams and Vivel Dot. I'm at the smallest, the lowest dose, 0.025. And every time I clean myself off, I get hot flashes again, so I can't stand it. After like 3 months, I go back on it. So there must be a way to wean oneself off and not have the hot flashes, but I don't know what to do.
Yeah, is there any reason why you want to get off?
Well, how long can one be on this? Because I've been on it like 13 years. I just think that's incredibly long.
Yeah, I don't think there's any limit to it. I mean, we have women and men on hormones for years because there's no real reason to stop them. Especially if we're dealing with someone who's got a condition that requires hormones, like osteoporosis, in my opinion, I won't stop them. But I have, you know, women in their 70s and 80s who are still on hormones. And, you know, there's no negative side to it. The question about breast cancer is not a real problem related to these hormones, because it's not the kind of hormones that previously were connected with breast cancer. The doses are low. And the benefits are huge. I mean, you're seeing that you have difficulty stopping them, but, you know, the other side of it is your skin is better. I think, from my own experience, that people's minds work better, their memories are better, their mood is better, they sleep better, the quality of life is so much better that, you know, why stop them? One thing we do on occasion, especially as women get older, they don't usually need as much. So as a person gets older, we can cut the dose back by 25 or 50% or something like that. So our own tendency is to go with the lowest working dose because we think that's the safest dose. I'm not sure that's totally true, but that's how we do things. And, you know, I don't see any reason to stop.
Well, my sleep has not been helped in all these years.
Okay.
I mean, other things I'm sure have been helped. But my main complaint, and this is being very honest, it cost me $1,500 a year to pay for it. And I was trying to find some alternative.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if bioidentical hormones are less expensive or more expensive, but I'm on a fixed income. I'm retired, and $1,500 a year is a lot of money for me.
Yeah. Well, I can let you know how to pay less than $1,500 a year for what you're on. Because you can do it for less than that.
Okay, I do have to come and see you. It's been overdue, I know.
Yeah, we can probably get your cost down by at least half.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much, and I will make an appointment to come see you.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Thank you so much for all the help you've given me.
You're welcome.
Okay, are there any other questions before we wrap it up for Dr. Sawson? Anybody? Going once, going twice. Okay. Well, I just I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your wealth of information with us. You know, people need to be educated, and they need to know that there are choices out there, and it's good to know that there's, you know, someone out there that's medically trained that they can go to that can give them both choices. I mean, I think that's fabulous for many people. So
well, thanks very much, Dr. Kiner. Appreciate being on.
Yeah, thank you. So I just want to give out your phone number one more time if anyone needs to get a hold of you. It's 949-600-5100, or you can email them at www.iprogressivemed.com. And if anyone needs to get a hold of me, we're at 949-642-5660. So thanks for joining us, everyone. And thank you again, Dr. Sawson. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Dr. Conner.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.